just going to start with an update on where we are with New Zealand tracking of the aftermath of the Bali bombing. We still have the 0800 number operational, and while the number of calls is dropping off, there's still a steady flow, with 534 inquiries having come into the Foreign Affairs hotline, of which 358 are confirmed alive and well, and 175 are outstanding, but we have no reason for concern about those 175 people. There are no New Zealand fatalities, no New Zealanders requiring medical evacuation. On the ground in Bali, we have the New Zealand ambassador to Indonesia, the consul, the second secretary, and a police liaison officer, and they will remain until they assess that there is no further assistance they can provide either to New Zealanders or to the Indonesian authorities. Last night, I spoke with the President of Indonesia. I expressed New Zealand's sorrow at the human tragedy of the bombings. Many of the deaths and injuries are those of Indonesians, as well as some from other countries, including our close neighbour Australia. I expressed our concern for what it would do to Indonesia's economy, because Bali and its tourism revenues are very critical to Indonesia. And I offered any assistance which Indonesia would like to ask for from us, particularly in the policing area, if they feel that we could be of assistance. On that particular score, and because we do have a relationship with the Indonesian National Police, the current police liaison officer, who is down from Jakarta, will be joined by the former police liaison officer, Superintendent Hamish McArdle, and he will be travelling up to Bali to support the current officer. We do have a memorandum of understanding with the Indonesian National Police on combating terrorism and transnational crime, and we want our officers to be linked into what's happening in the investigation in Bali. And I spoke to President Yudhoyono last night. He expressed his absolute determination to find those responsible, apart, of course, from those who appear to have blown themselves up as they inflicted death and injury on others. In terms of the travel advice, our travel advice is already very strong and has been very strong for quite some time. It was most recently issued in June. The travel advice states very, very clearly that there are indications that terrorists may be in the advanced stages of planning attacks. Such attacks could occur at any time, anywhere in Indonesia, including Bali. One cannot be clearer than that, and we advise New Zealanders to defer all non-essential and tourist travel to Indonesia. Now, coming to the other matter of the day, which is where from here, following the posting of the final result for the general election, which is a result which the Labour Party is obviously very happy with. It's a result that sees us up 2 points on what took us into government in 1999. And within a whisker, a fraction, 0.16% of the 2002 result. We regard that as a very successful outcome. As I said immediately after the election 2 weeks ago, the result appeared to give us at that time the opportunity to negotiate, support arrangements for a new government. And immediately after the election day, 2 weeks ago, I began holding discussions with leaders of the five smaller parties, which had all expressed an interest in talking to us and working with us in some way. After the first round of discussions at leaders' level, discussion continued at a chief of staff level, and a lot of scoping work and exploration of what might be possible has occurred. Obviously, with the final result now in, that process can be stepped up, and I'm starting the next round of meetings with leaders of the parties that we are interested in working with and who are interested in working with us in some way. So today I'll be meeting with the leaders of the Green Party again and the Māori Party and others in coming days. No significance whatsoever should be read into the order of meetings. It's a question of when people are available here in Wellington. Obviously, we would like to make good progress this week, but I'm not prepared to set artificial deadlines as to when I expect negotiations across the range of parties to be completed. It must take as long as it needs to get the process right. Additionally, having got negotiations to a certain point, some parties have consultation mechanisms which they will want to use to get the feedback or ratification from their party councils or special conferences or whatever the mechanism is, so time must be allowed for that. The starting point I have had from the beginning is to form a government which is stable and durable. And as I've said on media this morning, I think that the stability that Labour-led governments have brought under MMP over the past two terms have been very important, getting economic progress, and that clearly is a very, very high priority for us. And indeed, to tackle all the difficult balls that get bowled at governments, you need stable and durable arrangements for support in Parliament. So we start with that objective, stability and durability, and as I've said from the outset, we are looking to be inclusive and collaborative in the way we work. We know that MMP requires a certain amount of power sharing and a lot of consultation, and we're entering negotiations for a third term in government in that spirit. Any questions?
Could a government that included Green ministers and cabinet be an inclusive and collaborative government?
Well, I'm not going down any particular track on substance as to what the outcome of negotiations might be. My bottom line is stability and durability, and to do that I need to engage with a range of parties to test what's possible.
When you say that a government requires a certain amount of power sharing, obviously the progressives are there. Are you looking at more parties in terms of a formal coalition?
No, there's a range of well, the answer is not no to ruling out anyone else, of course. I mean, all options are on the table, and we have to now work through what is possible. And we are conducting a complex negotiation. It isn't a multi-party negotiation. It's a series of bilateral negotiations between Labour and five other parties. And that's partly why it takes time, but that's the way it needs to be done. What I'm referring to is where we've had a range of arrangements in the past, they have involved varying levels of input into the governmental process. So obviously parties which come to coalition have a very high degree of involvement. Everything's open to parties in coalition. We did amend the cabinet manual back at the beginning of 2000 so that it enabled parties in coalition to differentiate. That's very important to stable government under MMP. Then where we've had confidence in supply agreements with the Greens in the first term and with United Future in the second term, we invited parties in that relationship to put up proposals and initiatives for the budget each year. And that was done, I think, with some degree of satisfaction. And then in terms of the working relationship, which we had with the Greens in the last 3 years, we identified issues in which they, in that particular relationship, had a real interest. One of them was transport, and they worked very hard with our transport ministers the last 3 years. But in addition, we built up really quite open relationships on all manner of policy issues with United Future and with the Greens. And virtually without exception, we found that the confidence that was extended to them was honoured. And I think media will agree that there wasn't a lot that ever came out about early stages of discussion about legislation and so on. So I think that we go into this knowing that we're dealing with honourable people, and that once an agreement is struck about the way we work, then there can be a considerable amount of input and discussion and consultation.
Do you think it'll be possible to get 71 votes on your side?
Well, there's clearly a hardcore opposition, and that hardcore opposition is 48+2. I think with other parties, a range of agreements are possible. They may range from coalition through confidence and supply agreement to abstention, but the hardcore opposition can be estimated at 50.
Would this most stable and durable arrangement be a smaller government? If possible, would that be the most?
Not necessarily. I think we really just have to work through a range of options as to what's going to bring the maximum stability and acceptance across the parties we're working with.
So it is, will be a minority government, though.
Again, it's hard to judge without going into the second round of discussions. Obviously, in the first round of discussions, the Greens believed they had a real prospect of getting another seat. We knew that there was a prospect of the overhang reducing by one. We knew there was a prospect of the National Party losing a seat. But until that was clarified, you couldn't really start to refine what the firm positions of each of the five parties were.
Can you say that
the coalition deal inherently more stable than a conflict supply deal, which is inherently more stable than an agreement?
No, I don't think there's any difference in terms of stability. It's really a question of what's acceptable to the broadest range of people.
That was just the point I was going to make. It's clear that their attitudes towards each other will be a substantial factor.
They are a factor, of course.
In those scenarios you laid out before, are you saying that the only parties that will get policy concessions are the ones who actually offer neutral in supply, or might you get that through abstaining?
Well, what I'm saying is that the practice we've developed, where there is confidence in supply, is to invite the party offering that to put up a range of initiatives and suggestions for the budget, which clearly is a very important position for parties who are extending that level of support. The absence of that level of support hasn't stopped us having a relationship with the Greens, for example, in the last term, where we were very open on policy with them and enabled them to put up ideas and work things through. And that operated not only at the level of ministers, it also operated at the select committee level, where Labour MPs built relationships with members on committees from other parties with which we were involved. It also operated at the leadership level. I had the practice of meeting with Peter Dunn this last 3 years at the start of each parliamentary sitting. And as the term progressed, the meetings with the Green leadership became more frequent as well. So we would be looking for engagement throughout the 3 years at leader level, ministerial level, and at select committee level, and of course at the WHIPS level.
Can abstention be a form of support, though?
Of course.
Provides you the numbers.
Of course.
So how much level of input do you get if you're in a position of abstaining?
Well, if an abstention has the effect of sustaining a government, I'm sure that it would be accompanied by a willingness to work on a range of issues, but that would be subject to a negotiation
and
as well.
And proposed budgetary measures?
Well, we haven't taken that below the level of the confidence and supply agreement.
But you're not ruling that out?
I'm not ruling any options in or out at the moment. I'm just looking for what will give the most stable and durable arrangement.
You said you're listening to what parties have to say to each other about how comfortable they are being in various arrangements. Are you expressing a preference to them? Doesn't the Labour Party have a view about what it wants?
Well,
sorry.
Bad day for TV. look, the Labour Party's view is that it will negotiate arrangements which provide the maximum stability. That's triggered someone's talk box.
Sorry.
Not mine.
Hope it didn't reverse too fast.
It's done, French.
Not in this room. No, Vernon, the answer to that is our preference is the arrangement which gives the most stability and durability. We haven't expressed any other preference.
Given that you're going to need these parties to work together, are you envisioning that quite soon you're going to need to be having cross-party talks?
No, I don't believe so. That's not the way in which we've conducted our business the last 6 years. We've conducted it bilaterally.
What would your attitude be if they did that off their own bat?
Oh, I'm aware that ACT has written to other parties trying to coordinate sort of mass action against Labour, but I don't think too many are going to be taken in by that.
When you say you haven't expressed a preference, I know you haven't in public, but have you been private to those parties that you're negotiating with as to what sort of arrangement you'd prefer?
I think what we've expressed to all those we've spoken with is our desire to have a positive relationship with each of them and to build from a range of possible positive relationships, a stable and durable government. That's really been our starting point.
You haven't said don't rule out other coalition options for us, that's not your business, that's our business?
Oh, well, I mean, I've had discussions going back 2 weeks, last Monday and Tuesday. We've tended to hear people out. Obviously, some have expressed views publicly. But we haven't been in the business at my level of vetoing particular positions by smaller parties, if I could put it that way.
Have the smaller parties reinforced those vetoes that they've made in public to you in private?
Well, we've obviously tested what people's views actually mean.
It seems that Peter Dunn perhaps has made a softened stance a little on the Greens from some of his public pronouncements.
I think I should really leave Peter to speak for himself. I mean, he's expressed himself pretty clearly on the subject in the past.
Having tested those views, do you get the feeling that there are vetoes?
Well, I think we're in a process of lengthy negotiation as to what is going to produce a stable 3-year parliament. And what I detect is that the small parties have every bit as much of an interest in that as Labour has.
Just on Philip Field, are you expecting a report tomorrow from Noel Ingram?
I'm not expecting a written report, no.
Are you going to get a verbal report?
I don't expect to get a verbal report myself. I expect the head of my department to get some indication from Mr Ingram tomorrow as to how he sees the task ahead.
So it's clearly going to take longer than tomorrow.
Take as long as it needs.
Okay. Well, why is Philip Field still a minister?
Well, a range of allegations have been made. He's getting the chance to answer them in Mr Ingram's inquiry. That was the action we thought appropriate at this point.
What say the inquiry is not over by the time you come to name your ministry?
Well, that would be a matter, firstly, for the caucus, if Mr Field was seeking election to the Cabinet, and it would be a matter of judgment for me outside the Cabinet process.
Be aware of the claim by Rodney High about the letters in South Auckland being involved in playing with the school?
I haven't really taken any great notice of what Mr Hyde has to say, but every allegation that appears in the columns of the papers is duly referred to Mr Ingram's.
Has that one been there?
Our practice is for every allegation to be referred. Mr Hyde always says he has more allegations. This is our experience with him in the past, but it often doesn't come to much.
Will the inquiry also look at the appropriateness of Damien O'Connor's decision?
Certainly the QC will be talking to Mr O'Connor, but Mr O'Connor's very clear that he had no knowledge of any work being done for Mr Field when the matter was put in front of him.
Okay.